Welcome to the Growth Elevated Leadership Podcast with Julian Castelli. Each week, we talk with senior tech leaders to explore stories and insights about the challenges involved with growing technology companies. We hope that these stories can help you become a better leader and help you navigate your own growth journey.
Welcome to the Growth Elevated Leadership Podcast. So excited. Today we have a special guest, Miley Chione. She is the president and CEO of Listen Technologies, and she has agreed to join us this morning to talk about some of the leadership lessons on her journey. Welcome, Miley.
Thank you, Julian. It's a pleasure to share time with you.
Always great to connect with you as well, Miley. So tell us a little bit about Listen Technologies. What do you guys do?
So Listen Technologies mainly fulfills a need that is required by the ADA. So we're in the accessibility space. So for those of us who are going to be lucky enough to live past 65, a large percentage of us will start to gradually lose our hearing. And so we fulfill the ADA requirement for assistive listening. And that's very similar to the requirement in the ADA for physical disability accommodation, like parking spots, wider doorways, ramps, and that. And a lot of people just don't know that hearing is also covered under the exact same law. So our gear is in every NFL stadium, churches, theaters, just all kinds of public spaces, courtrooms, classrooms, anywhere that people need to hear better.
And what is your gear? Tell us about your core product.
Super simple. It's a transmitter and a receiver. And there's different types of it. There might be RF, you know, radio frequency, infrared. We now have Wi-Fi. We're coming out with some new technology in the Bluetooth space next year, which is going to be transformational in terms of our company's ability to enter new markets. So most of our business is in accessibility. We also have some really cool gear that Amazon uses in all of their sort centers. It's more like tour guide, two-way communication. During COVID, when social distancing was a thing, we sold a lot of gear, that two-way gear.
Got it. So basically, this is audio enhancement for folks so they can hear at public spaces and
yep.
And terrific. That's awesome. And so how long have you been with the company?
Oh, a long time. Going on 10 years this year, end of this year.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit, like, where did you guys, what along the journey, how large was the company when you started and where are you today?
So the company's actually been in business for 25 years. Our founder actually has hearing loss. Both of our founders have hearing loss. And so they had exited another company and were like, what should we do next? And so, you know, they started this company, obviously, with zero revenue. When I joined the company, it was about $12 million in revenue. And this year, you know, God willing, we're gonna cross somewhere between 26 and 30. So, you know, we just
fantastic.
Keep so our...
2 to 3x growth. And how about employees over that time? Have you grown as a company in size?
So it's one of the things I'm most proud of, being the CEO. There's been some, you know, downside to it. But for instance, I'll just give you an example. When I came on as the VP of marketing, there were 10 people in the marketing department. Today, we have 6. And so even though our revenue has grown, we found a lot of efficiencies in the company. So today at our peak, we had 72 employees right after a couple of acquisitions we did. And today we have 52. So we've grown. And again, I'm proud of
you. You've almost tripled revenue and a more efficient team base.
It's one of my skill sets for sure.
I'm sure that's been good for your bottom line.
Yeah, it has been very good. Yeah.
Well, fantastic. So tell us a little bit about your journey. So you started as VP of marketing there. Now you're the CEO. How does one do that?
I did. As you know, I just want to tell a short story about my journey. So when you and I worked together at Vacation Roost, you know, I was a VP of marketing there. And if you remember, one day you came to me after I'd worked there, I think a couple of years, and you handed me an iPad, and it said on the back, it was engraved, it said Miley Chione, CMO. And it was just such a moment for me where I went from being a, you know, VP of marketing to a CMO, and I was so proud of myself. And you know, that was part
of
the journey.
Of you too.
Oh, well, thank you. You were an amazing, and I'm sure still are an amazing boss. But I did take a step backwards when I came to Listen and started as a VP of marketing, then became a CMO shortly thereafter. At one point, our VP of sales, who was one of the founders, decided she wanted to leave the company. So the CEO at the time, Russ, the founder, came and said, hey, you know, this woman's leaving. She's the VP of sales. Obviously, we're going to have to figure things out. So I went and sat in my office literally for about 12 minutes from what I remember. And then I got up and I strolled down the hallway to Russ's office and I said, hey, I want the VP of sales job in addition to the CMO role. And so, you know, he kind of looked a little shocked. I don't think he knew I had a background in sales, you know, channel sales, exactly what we did. And so he let me do it. It was actually kind of amazing. And then I became the CRO and then president and CEO about 3 years ago.
That's an amazing journey. But that took some courage, didn't it, to go make that request? I mean, tell us a little bit more about that. How do you feel? Did you feel walking down that hallway?
It was really scary. It was really one of the most, I think, scary things that and bold things that I've done in my career. And I just remember thinking, well, those who don't ask don't get, you know, as I was sitting there. And it was a little nerve-wracking, honestly. And it was funny because he said, well, I'm gonna manage marketing while you're trying to get your feet under you with sales. And I thought, oh, that's not gonna last very long. And it didn't. It lasted like 4 weeks.
Right.
And it was just such a great journey to combine the two groups.
Is this when you became CRO?
Yes. So combine the two groups under the same leader, because I've been in organizations where sales and marketing hated each other, literally.
That is so common. In fact, one of the reasons I often recommend CRO is so that you have one boss, one throat to choke. But you can't have the finger pointing and say, well, I did my job, but those guys on the other side of the fence didn't.
And it goes both ways, right? The finger pointing always goes both ways. And so I do have a saying as, you know, a CMO, and I actually think I kind of uncovered this at Vacation Rooms where we work together, but I have a saying that I tell all marketers that I work with, and I say, we serve at the pleasure of sales. Whether you like it or not, and you think your ego, you know, is going to eclipse this concept, it's an absolute truth, right? I've stolen it from the president of the United States staff because they say we serve at the pleasure of the president. But I deeply believe that is a fact.
Now, wait a minute. Did your marketing people really appreciate and like that?
Oh, they hate it. No.
Right. That sounded a little controversial.
No, it is controversial, Julia, but I believe it is a fact. And if you can't come to the acceptance of that fact, it doesn't mean that salespeople aren't bullies. It doesn't mean that, you know, some of the best salespeople aren't really truly jerks. But at the same time, marketing has to understand the sales process. They have to understand the salespeople. They have to understand the need of the customers. So we truly do serve at the pleasure of sales.
So. Right, because sales closes the deals, and you're both focused on generating revenue. So when you know that's worth double clicking on a little bit. So it's one thing to say that, but what did you do in terms of practices, metrics, etc.? Did you drive your results all the way through to closed revenue? Because I know a lot of times it stops at, well, we created all the leads, and those dummies on the other side of the wall didn't know what to do with them, right?
Yeah, I think it really goes back to creating two things. So trust and synergy, right? So the salespeople have to trust that the leads that are coming are qualified and that they're going to be actionable. And you can prove that through data, to your point. You can absolutely drill all the way down to whether or not the lead is really actionable and closable and can, you know, make its way through the funnel. And so I think just declaring what the hierarchy is, that sales really does drive the business with marketing's help. First establishing that and then establishing metrics, very clear metrics. What is it that we want? What is it that we need? And then closing the loop on the back end, You know, how many did you close? What trouble did you have? Once you open the communication and you start seeing success, really the snowball rolls down the hill, truly. It's the initial kind of getting everybody on the same page that tends to be the difficult part.
And in your case, was it having the unified leader that broke the logjam? Because I see that so often. You get the pointing the finger, and then you get the stuff that's stuck in the middle in no man's land.
Yeah.
Which, like, well, we put them in the bucket. We didn't see them in the bucket, or it wasn't in the right email address. Or it's like, you know, complaining about the postman.
It truly is. Although some people listening to this probably don't even know what a postman is. But absolutely, one person, one leader. A lot of organizations are probably too big, but I'm a deep believer in the role of chief revenue officer. I've seen it work for sure.
Well, I think this is worth diving into. I'm going to invite you to maybe write a blog with me on this. So what size of the organization was it? How many people do you have in sales? How many people do you have in marketing? And where do you think the limits are?
So you are you talking about listen today?
No, when you took the CRO role.
Okay.
And you took the two tribes and said, hey, we're one team now. There's not going to be any excuses. We're going to establish those metrics. We're going to have better communication. We're going to try to get rid of the finger pointing. And you haven't even said all these things, but I just know that that's what happens every time when you have separate sales and marketing organizations.
Every single time. The leads cost too much. The leads suck. They're not closable. And then it's like, you're not giving us the sales data we need. You're not giving us the feedback we need to create better leads. It's a vicious circling the drain. So probably at the peak when I was the CRO, the largest the teams were, we probably had 15 people total, maybe 16 or 17. Mm-hmm. And so it's not a, you know, it's not several hundred people, which would be a whole different problem to have. But typically when you have these sales and marketing organizations, even if you had several hundred people in them, that's probably about the size, 15 to 20 people who are pulling the levers anyway, mm-hmm. right? They're pulling the levers for everyone else in the organization. It's the SEO folks. It's the, you know, it's the drip campaign folks. It's the sales, the VP of sales or the VP mm-hmm. of global sales. Those are really the people that are interacting, and they're filtering all the feedback coming up from everyone else. So even in a larger organization, I think the same principles apply. You need this small tiger team of people who you can, as the CRO, hold responsible. And one of the things, I mean, you know me as a very straight shooter. So I will sit in the room and I will say, we are going to get along. We are going to be respectful. We are going to show trust. And that's the way this is going to work. If it doesn't work for you, then this might not be a good place for you, which is one of my favorite sayings as a leader. This might not work for you. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. Right.
I like it. Repeat what you just said. We're going to get along. We're going to
show respect. Mm-hmm. We're going to have trust. We're going to have massive debate. But we're going to do it respectfully and with trust that everyone has the same goal in mind.
Massive
every
debate,
single person.
Unified yeah. action.
Correct. Correct. We might not always agree with each other, but we're going to agree on a direction. And, you know, today data drives everything.
Of course.
And it's really hard to argue with data. So even if the sales guys are saying your leads suck and we're like, well, you're closing 50% of them. Like, you know, let's just back
there's
up for
so
a minute.
Much psychology in yes. this repeated pattern that we're talking about.
There truly is. In any organization, I will make this statement and I will die by it. Any organization that allows that arguing between sales and marketing is just crippling itself. It is absolutely a crippling factor in growth.
So what size do you... You know, let's talk about how to scale that with a CRO. So, you know, you have 15 people, you can manage it. At what size do you have to kind of create, you know, directors of sales and director of marketing, VP of sales, VP of marketing underneath you think? And
yeah, I mean, we have a VP of global sales and a VP of global marketing. So, you know, although our team is larger today, well, not larger than it was in the past, but I still rely on the two of them, you know, to look eye to eye to
them. You are a triangle, the three of you.
Correct. And like they that. Love each other, which is a good perk for me. It is unusual. But again, I'm just fairly clear on what the agreements are going into the whole deal, right?
Yep. That's such a good lesson. Terrific. Well, okay. So that was a great little detour. I'm glad we touched on that. Tell me some of the things you're most proud of, at your tenure at Lyssn.
I'm very, this sounds trite a little bit, but I am really proud of our culture. We have a culture of hard work. We have a culture of having fun. We have a culture, which I think some companies have. I think a lot of companies can do better of tradition for, mm-hmm. which is closely associated with culture. But I think tradition is a really cool thing that we think of in families. You know, we mm-hmm. think of it for holidays and gatherings. But for Lyssn, we have a very deeply embedded traditions around certain things. Like once a year, the executive team cooks breakfast for the entire company. It's hilarious because I can do nothing but I'm the expediter. Like that's, I can't cook eggs. They let me 1 year try to cook eggs. They were like, no.
I recall you cooking some pretty good Hawaiian chicken.
Barbecue, I'm really good at. Yes. You want me to marinate some chicken? I'm very good at that. But
we barbecued some shrimp in the past, if I recall.
That is my first day on the job. We made shrimp.
Yep.
That was a dive right into the whole cooking thing. But you know, we have things like that that are very integral into our culture. And so I am really proud of what we've built here. I'm extraordinarily proud of our products. We produce audio products, so it's very easy to measure the quality of our audio versus our competitors. And our brand is very highly thought of in the audiovisual industry. We're specified into, you know, the best jobs and in the best places by our consultants and our integrators. So there's a lot of pride around our products.
That's awesome. Tell me about some of the challenges that you've had to face. What are some of the biggest ones that you've managed to overcome?
Yeah, everybody, I think, immediately goes to COVID.
That is very, very recent and very, very relevant.
Very relevant and very present. It's still causing problems. And we had, like many electronic manufacturers, a lot of supply chain issues at one point. So think about this, if you've ever been in hardware or software development, okay? And even software development, if you had to spend 75% of your time fixing bugs or doing part swaps. So because some parts became, we couldn't get, we had to pick other parts to swap into the product, right? So at one point during COVID, our engineering team was spending 75% of their time on sustained engineering versus new products.
And, oh my goodness.
And it was one of the most difficult. And then there were parts and pieces. I mean, we have hundreds of electronics parts in our product. There were pieces, you know, a little minor piece that would cost 5 cents now costs a dollar. And, wow. And it was chaos. You know, do we need to raise our prices? What's that doing to our margin? What's the overall impact? It was a really, really difficult 12 months. The thing I'm proud about during the difficulty is that our competitors all had product shortages and we didn't. So it was kind of a miracle. Now that meant we were carrying more inventory.
Supply chain challenges, you managed to not have shortages. That's amazing.
I think the longest we went on one product, one SKU, was 2 weeks of an outage. So that I am extraordinarily proud of, that we were able to do that. Again, our inventory, you know, if you really think down the chain of how that worked, it meant that we were carrying too much inventory at one point.
Cash flow pays off, right?
Right. Yeah. And we had loaded up because of some tariffs that were coming. So we had, you know, bulked up our inventory and it served us really well. We were lucky, not smart there, but it worked well.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, to be producing a physical product with all the supply chain challenges during COVID, you know, that's, you know, history's going to look back at this as one of those unique periods in business where we've had supply chain shocks and challenges that for the rest of our careers, we really haven't dealt with. and
oh,
amazing.
Yeah,
let's hope that we don't again.
Yeah, I hope so. But you know, you ask about challenges. I think the biggest challenge for me, having gotten into the CEO role just a little bit prior to COVID, right? Probably 6 to 9 months prior to that. I didn't realize, and I think it was compounded for me because of COVID. I really truly didn't realize how lonely it is. It's such a cliche. It's so lonely at the top, right?
Sure. You get all the C-suite perks, right?
Right. I get a park up front because I come at 6:30 in the morning, right? Yeah, that was a real shock to me. That was probably one of the most difficult things that I've dealt with personally, is understanding, dealing with, and kind of integrating that loneliness into, you know, into how I work, right? Mm-hmm. No longer are there peers that you can kind of go, hey, let's, you know, kvetch about this. It is, you have to be very careful about what comes out of your mouth all the way across. It has impact, right?
Yeah, that's a surprise, isn't it? Especially when you've grown up in the organization, right?
Yes.
Because you used to have a peer group, and you would have that those outlets to talk about things. And now you're the person that they're talking about.
<That's> well put. Very, very well put. Well, and as you know, what do I do now? I call you, right? I call you and two or three other friends, and I'm like, hey, can I buy you lunch? Like,
absolutely.
I just,
well, that's one of the critical things that I believe is a huge lesson, is having mentors, having a peer group, having a community of people that you can reach out to is invaluable. That's another thing we could write a blog post about, but it's so important. And I don't think you realize it until you're in one of those gut clenching challenges and you're trying to figure out who to talk to about.
Well, and it takes a little while. It took probably 6 months to really feel it, you know. And again, we were kind of marching into this really weird time that I think exacerbated it for me. And you know, you can pay mentors. I mean, there's all kinds of CEO whisperers out there. But at the end of the day, I think you have to surround yourself with a group of people that you trust and that you can call on to ask different questions to. You know, I'd never been a CEO before, so it was a little bit shocking to the system for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is definitely one of those lessons. And there are different times you might need different type of advice, right?
Yes.
So having access to, you know, the right type of mentors or coaches or phone
friends.
A friend, you like a lot, right?
Yeah.
It's that game show, right? The phone a friend game show. Get in the booth and say, all right, what? I'm out of the noise and all the excitement and the crowd. What do you think?
The confessional. We should have a CEO
confessional booth. Exactly. So, you know, our audience is comprised of C-levels who, you know, presumably are all striving, you know, for the CEO spot. It's lonely at the top. Any other lessons or stories that you want to share with that group?
Yes, for sure. One, there's this saying that is, you know, hire slow, fire fast.
Yes, I've heard that.
Yeah. So we actually have this rule named after someone who we should have let languish in the company.
That's not the thing you want to be named after.
And I'm not going to say the name, but every once in a while, when we're considering making a change or, you know, struggling with an individual, we'll say, oh, remember the blah, blah, blah rule, you know, because we let this person languish in the organization for too long. And so I think that the one thing that I've learned that I've actually executed, that's probably a bad word when talking about this, is to really make sure that you have the right people in the right position and be just diligent about it. Be, you know, maybe execution is the right word, because you can get so comfortable. And then at the end of the day, when you let someone go or you make a change or you say, hey, you're not happy here and it's not working for either of us, you know, you have that conversation with somebody, we need to make a change. Very rarely have I looked back and thought, wow, that was a mistake. But almost every single time I've looked back and said, should have done that sooner.
Should have done that sooner. You feel better, not worse.
Correct.
Right? You feel relieved. And you have all this anxiety beforehand.
Yep.
You carry the anxiety around for months. And then finally it pops. You say, wow, that wasn't so bad. Or I should have done that. Or it felt right. Or, you know, it was the right thing for both of us. That is one of the best four words lessons that I think is out there. Hire slow, hire fast. And it works on both sides. Because on the front end, you have the anxiety of like, oh my gosh, we have product to ship. We've got targets to meet. We've got quarters to close. I just need someone in the spot because I can't keep doing their job for another month. And then what does that push you into doing?
Yeah.
Trying to take shortcuts. Like, well, this person might be good enough. Maybe they'll change. Maybe I'll like them more after the interview. How many times have you said that?
So many times.
Yeah,
so we can fix it. We can bring them along.
Out?
Yeah. Yeah. But I'll tell you, one of my favorite things, and I honestly, I think I learned this from you, and we probably don't have time to go into my own personal story about what you taught me here. It was on a walk that I actually will never forget. But the point was to look at someone and say, you're not meeting our agreement. There's a whole story I have about the difference between agreements and expectations. And you're not keeping, you know, our agreement. And it just doesn't seem to be working for you. Right. And to have the courage to say that to someone and be able to accept all the downhill, you know, all the consequences
it's
of
scary
that.
For sure. It's not
very
a pleasant
scary
conversation.
Yeah. But I have used it, done it, and I've had people turn around, and then I've had people leave. And it almost always works out the way it should.
Well, that's a great lesson for sure. And so I'm excited. We've got multiple things we can write some blog posts about. So Miley, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Congratulations on the success. And we look forward to meeting again soon.
Thanks so much, Julian. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Miley.
Thank you for listening to the Growth Elevated Leadership Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, would you please follow us and subscribe on your favorite podcast player? And we'd be grateful if you recommend it to a friend. If you'd like more resources on how to become a better leader in business, we invite you to visit us at growthelevated.com. We'll be back next week with more insight from another great tech leader. Thank you.